The interesting thing to me with it, with that question, is that when we do that as teenagers, it's not really a practice of finding ourself. It's almost a practice of inventing ourself. Like, I'm going to decide who I am.
Whoa.
Let's try wearing these clothes. Let's try listening to this music. Let's try these people and everything. Like, I'm dictating my identity rather than I'm finding my identity.
Right? Mm.
And that goes on for a long time.
Yeah. All of adolescence is basically trying to invent an identity.
Yeah.
Instead of just searching what God has already put there.
Right.
So, someone who maybe is listening for the first time, who doesn't understand our background, a judgment they could make is, oh, this is all about like honoring yourself, loving yourself, sort of self-therapeutic deism.
Yeah.
So, connect the dots for us of how learning how to be truly honest with yourself moves us toward Jesus and growing in his likeness. Because everything that Liminal does and the organizations I've worked with, all of it is about coming to the Father, understanding who you are before God, like who you are in Christ.
Yeah.
But there's an essential like gauntlet to get through that does advance our relationship with God, and it is like getting honest with ourselves. So it's not moral therapeutic deism, but right. There is some stuff we have to do that gets us to Christ. So how would you articulate how important or how this helps us grow in the likeness of Christ and grow in our walk with God? Because it's the end goal is not, I know myself now, because that's every postmodern, post-Christian, meditative, you know, trend right now is, oh, know yourself and then you're good. You're not saying that it ends there. This is just a method to get us to intimacy with Jesus. So talk about that.
Yeah, and I appreciate the question and the way you worded it. I think it's important for any of us that are doing this type of work, doing soul work, doing emotional work,
yeah,
to be very clear about that too, because there is a danger that we could take a left turn and go that direction,
yeah,
and start doing a lot of self worship, and again, it's one of the reasons that I think it's so important for us to. I mean, we talk about this work being. Soul work and a lot of being alone, a lot of isolation,
yeah,
a lot of those kind of things. But it is so important to be doing this in community and doing this with other people that we trust and are doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
That can also call us out if we start going in those directions.
Yeah,
I think there's safety measures that are just built into that.
Yeah, it's so good.
And having that aligned with a church and with good eldership and pastorship and things like that is just important also. So yeah, I want to be responsible in even just saying that.
Yeah,
There's always a danger that we can take any good tools and use them for something bad, right?
But even systematically, there are some things in place that you have.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen this where if you just follow the steps, you're not doing this alone.
Right.
You're not in a vacuum,
right,
allowing yourself to become the idol in the altar of your own heart. It's no, men are going to call you out and...
Yeah, it's funny. I actually I was doing some study on some other stuff this week, and I never really thought about it this week before this way before. But that the in creation, the first thing that God said was not good was for man to be alone. Out of all of the things, everything's good.
Yeah.
And then as soon as there was man and man was alone, it's like, that's not good. Let's get you somebody else. Let's go.
Yeah. Yeah. Even that is a really helpful hook in for the person who maybe feels like they've got a really good intimacy with God on their own, but there's nothing else manifesting from that.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, this goodness of close nearness to God is not for your own self. And it's not good for you to be by yourself,
right,
man or woman. Man, that's great.
So to your other question, I this is kind of more of a thought, and it's not a conclusion yet, but there is something
I'm all about thoughts, man. This whole show is people listening to someone who's maybe like three steps ahead,
yeah,
saying, hey, let's try
still
this.
Still trying to figure it
let's
out.
Let's go, man. Let's go. Love it.
Oh, man, now I lost your question.
No, sure. I was just talking about how do we make sure it's about connecting, getting through self-honesty so that we have greater intimacy with Jesus.
So developmentally, and this might take us down a weird path also, because there's a weird story with my mom in this too, but there, developmentally, there's a, it's important, and this always fascinated me that God set things up this way. You know, we're born into connection. Mm-hmm. We're born completely connected with our mothers especially, and don't, they say that babies, they can't even tell where they end and something else begins. Like when they see mom, it's just, they just think it's an extended part of them. It's all in connection and everything. And then there's a part in development, and it kind of, it's a long period of time and goes into adolescence of starting to form our own identity outside of that.
Hmm.
Like we need to break away and figure out who we are and who somebody else is. And that turns into this big question about who am I and what's my identity?
Hmm.
And the interesting thing to me with that question is that when we do that as teenagers, it's not really a practice of finding ourself. It's almost a practice of inventing ourself. Like, I'm going to decide who I am.
Whoa.
Let's try wearing these clothes. Let's try listening to this music. Let's try these people and everything. Like, I'm dictating my identity rather than I'm finding my identity.
Right? Mm.
And that goes on for a long time.
Yeah. All of adolescence is basically trying to invent an identity.
Yeah.
Instead of just searching what God has already put there.
Right.
Wow, dude.
Right. And I think developmentally, it kind of has to happen that way. This is the frustrating thing to me about all this is like, you know, when we talk about getting to this place of being able to do all these practices and getting to a place of spiritually understanding who I am in the eyes of Christ, and the way that a lot of people will talk about it right now is there's this need to let go of our own ego, and our ego is our own kind of our own set, what we built as a sense of self.
Yeah,
and letting go of that to get to a place that's more centered in Christ and who he actually made us to be. But before we can do that, first we have to build the ego.
Yeah.
So the need to do that, all that practicing, all that sense of self-building, it's part of our development. It like has to happen before we can get to this other part, which always leaves me in this like, God, why didn't you just make it so we could just get right to this? Like, I just want to be in my identity in you.
Yeah.
But this is where I'm sorry if this doesn't
connect
perfectly, but
this is good.
I had some of the stuff that I've dealt with my mother. As she raised me, she gave me some messages that were really good, that were really important, and things that I today really hold on to as important truths in my life.
Hmm.
And there are things, she was very big into caring for others rather than caring for ourselves, or caring for, you know, that someone else's needs are going to be more important than our needs, and looking at we are part of something bigger, that we're not just who we are.
Mm-hmm.
And as an adult, I see these as really amazing truths to think about, live by. As a child hearing this, I wasn't ready for it, and all I got from it was, that means that you're worthless. You're not important.
Mm.
You're just like, and anybody else is more important than you are. Mm. And developmentally, there's like we have to be at a point where we're ready for these truths that I think God has for us sometimes, where as children and as growing up, we're not really ready for this stuff yet. So I think there's something about when we do the things that we do are almost as important as what we're doing at the time, because God has this kind of like natural development when we're spiritually ready for things, when we're ready for things. I'm even getting lost in the thought as I'm saying it, but like this is what happens when we like come
it's
up with
all good. Thoughts on the moment, right? No, but what you're getting at is you are doing the work to uncover maturity within your own self so that you can then get to like what God was actually trying to do and like helped you see almost. It's like you're wading through the swamp of your own internal drama and immaturity. Absolutely. Because the language of your mother hasn't, the phrases that are probably in your head are the exact same when you were now as when they were 13, but the state of your own soul is different, that you can actually receive it for what, like
right.
how it was a kingdom thing, not a you're bad and, you know, so it's almost like in the same way there are truths of what God calls us to that we have to wade through, like the mud of our own sin and dysfunction, whether it is self-perpetuated or inserted upon us by the sin of other people. But wading through that then enables us to better be in step with like what God wants you to do.
Yeah, the really typical progression.
Mm-hmm.
We see men in particular get into self-building, coming out of kind of being launched out of their teenage years and getting into manhood, and it's like this: I'm going to define who I am, and I'll do it by accomplishment. I'm going to accomplish this, and I'm going to push forward and build this ego and build this sense of self and get into this place of midlife and have like one moment of introspection and realize I'm not getting what I thought I was going to be getting out of this.
Mm.
Like I don't feel complete, or I don't get this level of satisfaction that I've achieved all of this.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like all of this stuff that I've been working towards somehow ends up betraying us.
Mm.
And then since this tower that we built has become our identity, now that we see that it's false, or we have this realization of that, it's like our entire identity collapses.
Mm.
And this is usually where midlife crisis kind of happens.
Yeah.
And then there's the question of who am I? And this is usually a perfect time for men to really latch on to God and rebuild their identity. This is that kind of first half of life, second half of life modality, right?
Mm.
It's first half of life, but you have to go through the first half of life in order to get there.
Yeah, the invented self has to self-destruct a little bit before you can discover, or what's the phrase, invented versus discovery. Yeah, like the invented self has to self-implode before you can actually discover who like the real person is.
Right.
The things that God put within you. So with that, something that you and I talked about yesterday at lunch, and then and Soul Work comes up a lot, is this, you even teased it out when you were like, if I don't do this thing, who am I at the end of the day? And the phrase that we've talked about on the show a little bit is this idea of like shadow.
Yeah.
Like a shadow self. I did an interview with a good buddy of mine. He called it super me. Like the projection of who you are.
Yeah.
That can lead you to destruction, but also great success.
Yep.
And that some of the greatest strengths we bring to the table are actually wound up in this shadow because it helped us survive and get going. And yet if you let it drive the bus of your life, you're going off a cliff.
Yeah.
So I have a question specifically about shadow that's really practical for listeners. But before, you know, how would you articulate shadow without – I don't want to jeopardize anything related to Initiation Weekend the work that people do, but – how would you articulate shadow? Because you're kind of hinting at it now about that invented self.
Yeah, I don't think I don't think having an understanding of shadow
jeopardizes anything.
Yeah, jeopardizes anything for anybody's initiation or anything. I actually think it's good to have a decent understanding of it. But I also think that it's another one of those words that people use that can, like, everyone will have a slightly different definition.
Yes. Right? Very good point. Very good point.
There's two words that I think get used quite a bit in a similar way. When I think of invented self, the word I'll associate with that is usually more a persona.
Yes.
And shadow, the way that we use it with liminal and with men specifically with this is really simple. It's anything that I hide, anything I repress, anything I deny. So anything that
anything I hide, repress, or deny.
Yeah. So anything that like
that's authentically there.
It's a part of me. This is not something outside of me or something that I'm trying to get rid of. It's a part of me.
Yeah.
But I don't like it, or I don't want to see it, or I'm just not aware of it. Period. So I'm just it's out of my conscious vision. So the crazy thing, I was doing some other research for something else, and I'd always heard. There's kind of this old wives' tale that like we're only able to access 10% of our brain power.
Yes, right? Heard that. Yep.
So it's not true.
I've heard it's not true. Yeah.
So our brains are always going at 100%. That's it. But the actual thing is that we only have conscious control over 10% of it.
We are only aware of about 10%.
Right. While our whole brain is going,
wild.
What we're conscious of is only 10%. More recent studies show it's actually way less than that.
Whoa.
It's closer to like 3 or 4%.
Jeez.
That we can be conscious of, which means all of this other thought, all of this other stuff is happening, but we don't even know it's happening.
The iceberg is even bigger.
Exactly.
that famous illustration of the iceberg, it's actually even bigger under the surface than we thought.
Right.
Wow.
And so any of that stuff that's in the unconscious, that's going on, but we're just not aware of it, or we don't want to be aware of it.
Yeah.
That's what we'd refer to as shadow.
Let's say you're trying to help somebody listen, and it's like, okay, I hear that, but like, what kind of things are we talking about?
Yeah. So this,
or if there's questions you would ask me to help me, and we could like, I mean, you could even ask me. I'll tell you my stuff, but it's like whatever would be helpful.
Well,
I'll throw
a couple of categories out there just to give it a couple examples. So it could be on an extreme side of things, right? There are people that have had things happen to them, or that have gone through experiences when they were young, or something like that, mm-hmm. that they don't even know happened. They
repressed memories.
Blocked it out completely. Yep. Exactly.
Yep.
They're absolutely still there, but there is a part of us that like turns that off. Like, hey, we're not ready to process this right now. We're just going to shut this down. So all of this stuff that's happened is put in a shadow.
And that's just, and they didn't even choose to do that. It's the brain protecting itself.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's like a cocoon or something.
But at the same time, that same part will also kind of watch out for danger at other points. So suddenly we'll be like, we can be in a room and somebody says something and it'll trigger something. And we just like, we have to get out of there. So we have some response. We don't even feel like we're in control of it.
Yeah.
And that's like this shadow part of us that we're just not aware of.
And that's
like
a pretty dramatic example.
That's a huge, yeah. That's like
that happens to people. Yep.
Just to give an example, but that's as extreme as it'll get.
Yeah.
But in the same kind of way, if there's just something we don't like. So going back to what we were talking about before, if I've got this idea that somehow I'm not man enough, but I don't consciously really think that. It's not like it's a thought that goes on in my head.
Yeah, you don't wake up in the morning saying, I'm going to prove that I'm a man.
Exactly.
You don't do that.
That's somewhere in a shadow spot. It's like a blind spot I'm not looking at.
Yeah.
Is this belief that I'm not man enough because I watched someone on TV that looked bigger than me or something like that. And I just had this thought, but it wasn't even a conscious thought. It was just in there. And so now I've got this drive to want to prove that. I want to prove I'm man enough. I want to prove something.
Hmm.
And that's shadow driven. Mm-hmm. It's not in my conscious thought. It's something that's unconscious.
Hmm.
And I think about this. You know, when I talk about shadow with men in groups on weekends, things like that, in Romans, when Paul talks about the parts of himself, right? But different parts of me, there's a part of me, and it's always that tongue twister that I can never get right. There's like, I want to do
what
I don't
do, and what I want to do
the good, I don't do the good.
There's so many translations now, dude. You'll get it close.
That's right. You'll be all right. But he speaks really specifically of like there's this part of him that drives him to do these things that he doesn't want to do.
Yeah.
But he was specific in talking about it's a part of him.
Yeah.
And he says it's a sinful part. And I think about sin as like the action. Mm-hmm. There's a negative action that I take in my life,
mm-hmm.
And the evil that I do, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we can get into the. You know, the theology,
the doctrine of
everything.
It.
I don't believe what he's saying though is that the part of me is evil, but out of it, evil will come.
Sure.
If I don't tend to these parts of myself, I don't start to look at them.
Mm-hmm.
They're gonna do negative things. They're going to because if there is some thought about myself that like again going back to that if I've got this thing in my ear saying you're not a man, you're not man enough, I'm gonna figure out a way to prove it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll do damaging things to prove it.
Well, that's, you know, just to play it out, the person who crazy demands at the job and they would never say, I'm going to stay up and answer these emails and neglect my family because I'm not a man. They would never say that. But the endless pursuit of chasing the carrot in front of you that is that's dangling in front of you, that like that promise of manhood and success and validation, if that plays out, that's how you get a neglected wife or absolutely. Neglected children who don't want a vacation with you when you're 40, and people who, like, when you're old and dying, they don't make it a priority to come out and see you because of the damage you left. Like, if you just play it out, it destroys things, and that's what sin does.
And I mean, to be really clear, even in an example like that, it's like if I'm if I'm working and it hits 6 o'clock and 6 o'clock's my cutoff, but I'm not quite finished, and I've got this shadow part of me that has this message that says, if you don't finish your work today, that means you're worthless and you're a bad son.
Mm.
I'm going to neglect my family and I'm going to get this done because I don't want that to be true about me. And this is not a conscious thought, right?
Yeah, and even if you do go home and have dinner, but you don't address that, it's still going to be there.
It's gnawing at you.
It gnaws at you, yeah. And I mean, I deal with that. I've noticed sometimes, like, when I lift in the mornings, there's like a validation. But then the days when I don't lift and I come home from work, there's like that nagging, like, you didn't get it in today. Like, you're not tough. Like, you know, you didn't earn, blah, blah, blah. And like, there's even things to get curious about that there. And then there's days where I forgot I lifted and the nagging voice comes up. And then I'm like, wait a second. No, I did. I am good. And then it's like super weird. But even the fact that I'm telling that internal voice, no, I did and I am good, even that is something to be curious about. Like, it could be that seemingly minimal in the moment, but it is a sign that there is something stirring about, am I lifting because I want to honor God with my body, or am I lifting because I am combating like the little skinny boy in high school who got picked on, or like, you know, there's some wound there.
Absolutely.
Like I tell my friends who have like kids, because we obviously the joke is like, oh man, I got kids, I want them to go D1. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And part of, I look at like the documentaries about like Tom Brady and Michael Jordan, mm-hmm. and I'm like, I think I want my kids to be so emotionally healthy, they never have to worry about that.
Yeah.
You know, like, you can't become Jordan without like a crazy shadow. Or like Tom Brady with like this constant chip after 7 championships, as successful as he is. Part of my dream as a father is to raise children who never have to validate themselves quite like that, because I just don't know if you get to that peak as a fully well-adjusted, healthy person. I don't know if that's true. I
agree with you. And there is, and again, we talk about these tensions. I'm like, there's a lot of great stuff in the world, or great people in the world, that probably wouldn't have hit the heights of greatness if they were much healthier people, right?
And then it's,
and we probably would have lost out on a lot of stuff.
The head of IJM, I forget his name, but he runs International Justice Mission all over the world, rescuing people out of trafficking. He works closely with Ruth Haley Barton, who's all about this work. And
I actually did some music for her.
Oh yeah, I probably listened to it. I was at one of her retreats last year.
Oh cool, okay.
And it was similar to the TAZ, or however you say it, services.
Yeah, actually I'm totally derailing. The guy who recommended Taze to me was her kind of worship director guy who hired me to do that.
I know exactly who he is. Okay. I couldn't tell you his name, but he led the songs.
Rory Noland.
Okay, there you go. Okay, this is wild. Funny thing. But yeah, but then like, you know, that guy who running IJM, he ran himself into the ground launching that organization. And now he's recalibrating, getting healthy, and now operating like from a more contemplative space, and then still kicking A, like for the kingdom, like beating hell out the door, rescuing little girls. Like, it's beautiful, but it's both, you know, and it's to that point of God will even use the dysfunction to build something of the kingdom, but his desire is, I think, health and proximity and presence and all those things.
And then there's an,
because I
see this, I told you this is going to go in a million different directions, man.
It's all good.
Hearing that, there's also this, you know, we're all built differently. And some people can just run at a different pace.
Yeah, that's true.
I remember reading this thing about Walter Payton and his workout regimen, even between seasons. And he said teammates would always be like, hey, I want to do your workout with you. Like, you're the greatest. We've got to figure out what your secret is, so we're going to work out with you. It has to be like, you're welcome to come along, but I'm not going to slow down for you, basically. Mm-hmm. And nobody could ever keep up.
And that's why he was the best.
But it wasn't because he was working harder than them, I don't think.
Okay.
Because, I mean, anybody that's wanting to do that, and I've seen this happen with churches also, where, like, I know some pastors that just have this innate thing where they sleep 3 hours a night, and they're fine.
Yeah.
It's not because they're not, like, especially driven to be like, I can't sleep more than this. That's just how God wired them, and they can go that way.
Yeah, they're a Ferrari.
And someone else is like, I'm going to try doing that too. But they just don't have the, you know, their biology is completely different like that. I can't do that.
Yeah, me neither, man.
And that's, there's, there's something with that. For myself, I've had to deal with this a lot where I'm
like comparison
this
is element.
How, yeah. Mm-hmm. If I'm comparing myself to somebody else, man, my identity is going to get rocked really fast.
Mm. Yeah. Comparison is one of those key weapons of shadow, I feel like. Like there's something integrated in there.
Yeah.
Where, yeah.
I had a theory. I'm not going to remember the quote exactly, but it was something along the lines of like, nothing good ever comes out of comparing yourself to somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
It's either going to go one way where you're just going to like be putting them down and feeling like, mm-hmm. you know, have a false sense of your own grandness or something,
mm-hmm.
or the other way where you're just putting yourself down for no reason.
Totally. So two practical questions I have for you, okay. just as like a sage that I have in front of me that I suffer. Because sometimes when I do podcasts, I'm like, okay, what are the questions people would really want? And then when I don't do it well, I'm like, I didn't actually ask the questions I would ask if we were like getting beers. So I want to make sure I ask a couple of those because I'm not performing.
We should do this over beer.
Bro, missed opportunity. Next time. I'll bring them in. So, you know, one thing I'd love just some wisdom on is I found myself lately having to resist the temptation to like grade the quality of my time with God. Like I coming out of like deep pain and just chaos of 2020, it was easy to feel like a strong sense of like how the Spirit was at work. You know, there was, you know, praying when you're angry or scared or sad, there's a richness to that because like you need something. But when life is going good, like the emotional sensory stimulation is different sometimes. Or when there's like great news and you're praising God, like that's obviously great. But there's like a mundanity, right, that comes along of just walking with Jesus for a long, long time. And I know it's like a road trip. You know, sometimes you're going to have vibrant conversation and laughter, and then sometimes it's going to be still. But is there any advice you'd give me and anyone who listens who deals with this on just resisting that temptation and – or what does that say about me that there are times when I'm not really getting much from them? I'm doing the things, you know, I'm practicing the verses I've memorized. I'm reading scripture. I'm sitting in silence. I'm asking myself questions, but.
What do you want from him in those moments?
See, this is what I was talking about. What do I want from him?
Yeah.
I want to be different than I was the day before. Like, so I want to grow.
Okay.
Like I want to be growing. I want to be learning new things. I want to experience new things. I want to feel affirmed that like I'm in the right spot. There's like a subtitle of if I'm not feeling or sensing God, that I'm somehow off a little bit, which I know is wrong, but I still want.
Yeah.
And I think part of it too, Chris, is just like I've been in those places where I feel like I'm almost like Moses. I'm staring at God right now. Like I feel like I feel like I'm glowing when I come back out into reality. And it's when you experience or taste that, like you want more of that.
Yeah.
You know, you want to go back and have more of that great meal or that great laughter, you know. So part of it is just that. So I think it's personal transformation, growth, sensing that I'm doing the right things, but also just when you just feel like the kindness of God or you feel his presence, like it's addicting. And I don't mean like a worship moment. I'm talking about
I'm with
you. I'm in the woods by myself. There's nothing stimulating, but I just like there's a sense of. So that's what I'm talking about. Because there's lots of times where it's like, I'm up, I'm doing it, my time was fine, nothing in the Bible jumped out, I felt distracted, and I even know distractions are okay.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still like, man, I wish. I got more out of that.
So
that's just my work. What do you think about that?
I'm really curious about something you said earlier where you said you're a recovering people pleaser.
Yes.
How much of that do you think also goes into your quiet time with God?
Like wanting to please him?
Yeah.
It's a good question.
And, well, there's wanting to please him, and then there's usually something that you'll get out of pleasing him, right?
Sure, like acceptance,
yeah,
love,
affirmation. Like that.
It might be that. It might be wrapped up. Because performance is like a big shadow.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Like young age, changed schools. I've preached about this.
Okay.
Learned I was a total misfit, total isolation hermit, nobody, went from poor school to rich school. And then I suddenly was good at sports and I was accepted by all the cool kids. And I just rode that wave for 15 years.
Got it. Okay.
So there's some of that in there for sure. I don't feel like I have to perform for God.
Yeah.
But I'm sure that I'm still in the process of digging out some of those weeds. Like the big weeds, I've got.
Absolutely.
But I know there's probably others. I'm looking for like the seeds of the weeds.
Yeah, exactly. And there's like, there's kind of a learned behavior kind of, hey, I'm so used to doing things a certain way or so used to having a certain reaction.
Yeah.
The interesting thing, well, one of the interesting things, and even what you said, is even that idea of looking for affirmation from God.
Mm-hmm.
To be clear, it's so easy to get this stuff messed up. That's actually a good thing, right?
Hmm. It's okay to hunger for that and want that.
To want to be affirmed by God?
Yeah.
I think so. This is a great kind of going back to a shadow piece, though. But if I'm not aware of it, if it's like if that's kind of shadow motivating me, mm-hmm. I've got this desire to be affirmed by God, but I'm not really clear about it.
Yeah.
So if it's something I don't get, I end up walking away from a time like something's not finished or it's not like it. I didn't get fully out of something what I was looking for, even though I didn't consciously know I was looking for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I'm using that as an example. I'm not saying that's what's
still helpful
to you.
Yeah. Because I think one of the reasons I'm not scared about this is I know I'm asking the question. Like I walk away from my time knowing there is an impulse to want to grade how good of a time with God that was. And Sherry kind of poked at that even like a couple months ago, and that was helpful. But, you know, I know that there is a part of me that wants to walk more confidently or less confidently based on the emotional state I have coming out of a quiet time. I know that that is logically not how the nature and character of God is displayed through his word.
Right.
And at the same time, there is a longing of the heart to get that as a gift. So I think like, to kind of go back to what you said, living in that balance is in the tension part is part of the practice of like learning and growing and just holding that in front of you and seeing if you're not careful, this could start driving things.
So I'm not going to process you.
Okay.
I have a weird way of looking at some of this stuff though, where, I think anytime, and this goes back to something you were asking before about some practical, like how can people start to look for some of these things?
Yeah.
Anytime, especially the way that you worded it, where it's like, I know that God isn't seeing me this way, or I know this isn't, but I also notice there's something there.
Yeah.
Anytime I get some of those thoughts or any of those kind of sensations, that's usually a good time for me to stop.
The head to heart disconnect.
Right.
Okay.
And say, okay. Somebody else had mentioned something about this that was really similar when we talked about emotions in general.
Okay.
There's this, and when we talk about emotions, I'm strictly talking about like a sadness or a fear or an anger, not like, it's easy to get into like judgments and calling them feelings. Like, I feel like this was supposed to just happen.
Yeah.
That's not really a feeling.
Yeah.
But actual emotions that there's, if I'm angry about something, but it's not relating to the situation very well.
Yeah.
There's this thought that we can't really trust our emotions.
Mm.
And the reason that we can is sometimes if there's something else in our life that we haven't dealt with that is in shadow, this might be a thing that's reminding me of something else. So the anger actually makes sense, but it's misplaced. It goes somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
Like anytime any of that stuff doesn't quite jive or doesn't match up, it's usually a good time to stop and pause and think through like what is this reminding me of, or what is this, what am I angry about?
Mm.
And I like to think of those as actually kind of gifts from God.
Hmm.
Like even walking away from a prayer time and thinking like, I'm noticing like these judging or even wanting to rate something like that and thinking I didn't measure up today in some way, but I know that doesn't relate to my prayer time. So what is it relating to?
Hmm.
Where is that coming from? Because there's probably a shadow element in there somewhere.
And it's great.
And it sounds like you've done enough work on this kind of stuff already where you could probably go like, oh, that's probably like this for my childhood or something like this. And then you can kind of journal about that stuff too, because it sounds like that's coming up in the moment.
Yeah, yeah.
And I really think, in a very beautiful way, God gives us that stuff so we can notice it and see it and actually heal from it if we need to heal from
it. It's a gift where he's hinting at where we can go get curious about something. Yeah. So for the person listening, I'm going to summarize what Chris just said because it's brilliant, but I'm going to put on my horns because that's what I do. I would say when you find yourself having an emotional response to something that you know cognitively or intellectually is not right and yet you still feel it, that's something to get really curious about.
Yeah.
Because there's even, let's go relationally. My friend said this to me. I don't think that they disrespect me, but what came up here in my head, I don't believe they disrespect me or dishonor me, but what came up within my spirit was that they disrespect me and dishonor me.
Right.
That is a great sign. My wife said this, and I know that she doesn't, I know she would never say what came online in my own spirit when she said that, but that's what did, and now I'm at like an 8 out of 10 over it. And you're saying even receive that as a gift of like the Holy Spirit of like, hey, I'm giving you a glimpse into something that could be worth exploring here to help you grow.
When I'm on men's weekends, I'll say this. I started using this as a way of teaching a concept. And I just say to men, like, I had a really rough, just a couple of days ago, my wife said something really horrible to me. She said that I was a horrible husband, that I didn't measure up, and I wasn't good enough, and she didn't want to be around me anymore.
Hmm.
That's not exactly the way she said it. What she actually said was, did you take the garbage out? But what the way I got it was like, no, you're
what rose up within me. Yeah, dude.
But yeah, I think, and in marital situations especially, I mean, there's marriage partners are such great triggers for all of our stuff. Then yeah, even it's hard in the moment,
you know. Oh,
when tempers are going or something like that, it's hard to have that kind of self-awareness.
Wait, Chris, you mean you and your wife have fights? You don't just step in saying,
we got some classics.
You don't just step in saying, what the Lord is giving me right now. You don't do that?
Oh, man. You know what? The worst thing in the world is like doing this work and having like my wife point out to me like, this isn't really about me, is it?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, come on.
That's not fair. But yeah.
That's right. Totally, and you're good. Right. You're totally right. But
yeah, that's my wife and I, Stephanie, had conflict. And she, it was basically when I was like, I you know, is this... I'm going to receive what you're saying, but you know, is any of this something like that's just yours and you need to own it? Yeah. And I'm like, listen, you, I'm not trying to be told that right now, even though you're totally accurate. Okay. So for someone who is hearing all this, they're intrigued. We talked for a long time. Thank you for giving me your time.
Absolutely, man.
This has been a blast. I'm pretty
no,
sure
you're great to talk to you.
I'm missing a meeting already right now, and that's fine. If someone is feeling stuck, and they are hearing things that are intriguing to them, they maybe sense like God is nudging them to take some steps on this.
Yeah.
Whether it is in their own personal time with the Lord, whether it's connecting with somebody or stepping into one of these environments that you and Sherry are, you know, architecting for people, you know, what are some next steps that you'd advise someone to do who maybe is hungry for more, you know, owning masculinity or femininity?
Yeah.
Getting curious about your own shadow, you know, trying to resolve those disconnects between head and heart, exploring faith as not just a transcendent internal thing, but even like of the body and of action, stuff like that. Anything related to that, what advice would you give people? What are some next steps you would encourage them to do?
A few things. And if anybody listening is close here.
Yeah. Which a lot are.
Yeah, one of the beautiful things about Mosaic and about the church here is leadership having such a great understanding of this kind of work already. Come and talk to somebody.
It's good.
Like, yeah. There are so many people that have gotten involved with this already, and spiritual direction specifically is such a great way to start being introspective and do it in a really safe way. It's really honoring of Christ, bringing closer to Jesus also. For the deep dive, quick way to do it.
Let's go.
These initiation weekends are phenomenal. I mean, you've had your experience with Crucible.
Yeah.
I've
got four great friends who just went on the men's liminal weekend and it wrecked them. It was beautiful. And they were all some of my more skeptical friends.
You say rectum may sounds like it was a
No. Like, you know, like
no, I know what you mean.
They were my more skeptical friends.
Yeah.
Who took a while to go, and they came back just rejuvenated, refreshed with deep work. But they're not those guys who are like, they go do something and say it's great right away. Like, it's got to be great, and they all raved about it.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I want to be really responsible also in just, I mean, you know my background,
yep.
You know what I do and everything, and I'm really proud of what we've put together with Liminal. Liminal is one place to do this kind of work.
Sure.
And it's not the thing.
Mm-hmm.
I happen to be biased towards it.
Yeah. I'd want you to be. I'd have concerns if you weren't biased towards it.
And there's other initiation kind of style weekends also. The weekend work has been a great way to enter into this. And I think, like we were saying before, there's a timing for that also. That's mm-hmm. It's not... somebody said this once. I thought it was a great way to put it when they were talking about... the question was like... These men's weekends specifically, like, are they for every man? Are they good for everyone?
Mm-hmm.
My friend said, yeah, I think they're for everyone.
Hmm.
Not necessarily right now, though.
Yes, that's good.
There's a different time for everyone.
That's good.
And, you know, one of the things you and I were talking about yesterday is it's really the reason Liminal was started was I don't want weekends to be the only way that people can get into this work.
Yeah.
So... I really want people to be able to get into this work by joining groups.
You're actively pursuing ways in which some of this exploration of shadow can be done even prior to initiation.
Yeah.
So that people can know when they're ready.
Yes, absolutely.
Because I've got some friends who are like, I think I want to go, but I'm not sure if I'm ready yet. And I'm like, I think it's, if you're not sure, don't.
Yeah.
Like there's other work that's being developed to help them figure that out.
And this is it's a gentler way to kind of step into it step by step. It'll get you to the same. The thing I love about this work, though, is the freedom that comes, and especially from, I think anybody that has any kind of church history understands that, you know, going back to persona, the masks that we wear, the protective stuff that we put out there, and like, this is what I'm allowing people to see.
Yeah.
But to have a group of people that I can go into and actually let them see the true me and know that, you know, I'm going to be showing up and this is how I'm going to be showing up and they're going to accept me as I am.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing how much horsepower is needed to hold on to those masks.
Hmm.
And when I started doing this work and was able to first like take an actual mask off and just be myself, I was amazed how much extra energy there was in my life to actually go after the things that really mattered.
That's good.
So having some place to be able to do this kind of work and just be yourself, the way that God honestly created you.
Mm-hmm.
It's transformational.
Yeah, and you know, the implicitly communicated in everything you're saying is a first step is really realizing this isn't going to be done on your own, mm-hmm. by yourself. You know, a lot of the practices I talk about are things that people do by themselves, but there is an element of all of this really working when you have like this triad of deep proximity with Jesus, communal relationships that help you grow, and then like sacred spaces where the community provides environments for you to explore what's coming up in that private space. And so just implicitly in everything you're saying, Chris, you know, the person listening should know these aren't things that you'd say, hey, go figure it out by yourself. Like
right. There's
counsel, spiritual direction, opportunity, stuff like that. So if somebody wants to learn more about Liminal, I'll put all this in the show notes, but
Great. Where
could they, either hear more about Liminal, hear more from you, or anything like that. Where would you send them? What should they do?
Yeah, go to the website, liminalwork.com.
Liminalwork.com, great.
And if you want to send a direct note to us, we'll respond to that. Sherry and I will respond directly to those kind of things. And if you're just interested in weekends, things like that, all of that information is there on the website too.
And, you know, we've got a thriving community here in Maryland. If you're not in Maryland, I know we have people listening all over the world, thankfully, here in the UK mainly. But there are thriving communities in the Colorado area and in Kentucky as well. And you've heard us talk about, you know, the Crucible Project. They've got environments everywhere as well.
Yeah.
But so liminalwork.com, we'll put that in the show notes. And anyone who wants to reach out to Chris, go ahead and send that direct note and he and Sherry will get it. We'll probably, depending on who sends it, depends on who you get response from. But dude, it's great. This is fun.
It's been great talking with you, man. I really like being
here. I hope we went all over the place. I hope that was okay with you.
Yeah, I love going all over the place. That's how I live.
I feel like there's so much I would want to talk about with you that's more specific to like some of the processes you've constructed and stuff like that. But that's not necessarily for a public audience. So that'll be maybe something we can do a bit later. But thanks, brother. Appreciate you.
Absolutely. Yeah, thank you. Appreciate you, man.